I'm Heather, and I'm an alcoholic. And congratulations to everybody who picked up a chip, and to any newcomers, even if you didn't identify yourselves, because this is a safe place. And you can be who you really are here, and you don't have to be afraid anymore. And it's a safe place, trust me. So, and Mindy did a great job, and it's crazy because I laugh more with her than I do with, like, almost anybody I know today. And to see, like, how much she's changed from being in this and working the steps and being a part of and taking the action, it's just, I'm just amazed. So thank you. My sobriety date is April 29th, 2005, and my home group is TJIS 2. I have a sponsor, and she is a sponsor, and I sponsor women. I started drinking when I was like 13, 14. I don't really remember the age. Doesn't really matter. First, I started drinking to get drunk. That was like why I started drinking, stealing liquor from my parents. And the first time I actually got drunk, I blacked out. So, I mean, it bothered me. I got sick. I don't remember, obviously, anything that happened. And I felt horrible the next day. But the next time I had a chance to drink, which was a couple months later, I did. So it didn't bother me that much. I liked the way it made me feel, because I thought it was fun, and I would laugh, and then I would black out. So I don't know. I liked what I remembered and did feel, I guess. So I got into high school and started doing other substances just because they were easier to get, but it was just that I wanted to change the way I felt, whether it was drugs or alcohol. It was just changing the way that I felt about myself or whatever, because I was nervous and scared and uncomfortable, and that's what I did, changed the way that I felt. So I barely graduated from high school. That became a priority to me, to drink or to use, and I, you know, got kicked off of cheerleading and was hanging out with, like, the wrong kids, my mom would say, the bad kids. But it was just people that I could drink and use around that basically I could take advantage of and feel better about myself, because they had dropped out of school and they were living in a house with a bunch of, like, people our age. So it was just easy to go party with them, and that was my priority. And so I barely graduated from high school, and I went to college because I guess it was the right thing to do, and my parents, you know, pushed me to do that, and didn't last long there. Lasted like a year and a half, and was just in bad situations and not caring about what I was doing or who I was around, or you know, was really losing my relationship with my family. And I rolled a car, so I was starting to have some consequences as far as, like, that stuff goes. I didn't hurt myself or anybody else, but it was just getting scarier. And I decided, when I got kicked out of college the first time, there were like five colleges, so I decided, oh, I was going to start working in restaurants, so, because that was easy, and I got a job, so that helped, and the money was there, and it was great, and the hours were great, and so I kind of got stuck in that rut. I guess it's not a rut, because it's a good money-making career if you want to make a career of it, but for me, it was just a way to, like, really get into my disease. So I was living in Kansas City at the time. That's where I was raised, and still hanging out with these people, the bad crowd, and I thought, oh my God, I have to get away from these people because they're bringing me down. I didn't see that it was me, it was them. And so I decided to move up to Michigan to be with my grandma, because my grandfather had just passed away, and it was like, I can go up there and I can be a good granddaughter and support her, and that didn't happen at all. As soon as I got up there, I like searched out the people that I could drink with and do what I wanted to do with, and the first time I went drinking with a girlfriend, I was driving home and I had a headlight out, so I got pulled over and I got my first DUI, and I had something in the car, so I got a possession charge as well, and it still didn't dawn on me that I was making bad choices. It was like I'm it's my age, that's what everybody does at this age, and I was trying to go to school, and I was on probation now because of this, the DUI that I had, so I had to drop every month for that, and I dropped dirty a couple times, so then I had to be sentenced, and this is the way that I think. Like, I went out to the bar the night before I was going to be sentenced, and I thought, well, if I only have a couple, it'll be out of my system, and they won't smell me when I go to court the next morning. And I knew they were going to test me for certain drugs, but I didn't think they would test me for all drugs. And they did, because that's what they do. And my system wasn't clean, and I lied, and I said, "Oh my God, this test is wrong." And it was incredible. And the judge is like, "Okay, we'll go get another test and have it to me by 4 p.m. And I went to class because I had class that day, and I begged this girl, this poor girl who I didn't even know, to pee in this cup for me. And I think she was so scared of me. I never saw her again. And so I held this little cup to keep this warm, and I went, and I don't know how I got cleared, but I did. So I was still on probation, but I didn't get any jail time that time. But I continued to drop dirty. So long story short, I did end up getting sentenced to 5 days in jail, and I thought it was horrible. Like, I didn't belong there, and oh my God, these people, and it was so sad. And then I got out of jail, and my boyfriend at the time picked me up and had like a 40 in the car, and it was just right back to what I was doing, and that was my life, and those are my priorities. And I continued working in restaurants, and I actually got a couple of management positions. I don't know how that happened, but it was a really good opportunity for somebody my age who doesn't drink or use, but I took advantage of that, and I couldn't make it to work, and I was making up stories, and I'm sick, and blah, 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 and they're like, well, we need a doctor's note, and because even though, like, some of my shifts would start at 11 in the morning or 10 in the morning or 4 in the afternoon, I couldn't make it to work because I was either still, you know, hungover or high from the night before, or still doing whatever I was doing, because I would have like binges for days, and so then I had to like create fake doctor's notes. I got fired from 2 jobs for doing that. You think I would have learned the first time, but I didn't. And that's embarrassing when you live in a little tiny town and word spreads around. You know, I burned my bridges there. It was horrible. And not to mention that I wasn't a good friend or girlfriend anyways. So, you know, I would like jump from friend to friend or girls who liked me, and I would use them. And same with guys. I would just jump from relationship to relationship. And that's who I was. And it didn't feel good because I had a conscience. Like, my parents raised me with morals. Like, I knew what was right and wrong, but I didn't care because that wasn't part of the game, I guess, you know, because if I cared, then I would have to admit that this was wrong, and I wasn't ready to do that yet. So I decided to move down to Tampa, and thought maybe that would help, and got a job at a restaurant here, and went to a different school, massage therapy, 6-month program. I thought, oh my God, I can do this, because it's just 6 months, and I couldn't even do that. So I got engaged to my trainer at Bennigan's. And because we were drunk one night and somebody said, you guys should get married. And we were like, yeah, we should. And waking up the next morning realizing, like, holy crap, I'm engaged. Like, I couldn't admit, like, maybe that was a bad idea. Because I'm stubborn. So I was like, we're going to make this work. We're going to do this. And we went to Vegas for his birthday, and we did end up getting married. And it was just a horrible, physically violent relationship on both parts. It wasn't just him. It was me, too, you know. I definitely can't say it was all him. And I wasn't happy. He wasn't happy. And that lasted for 4 months and 16 days. But we went to marriage counseling and everything. Like, I was so, we're going to make this work. I was just like, oh, disgusting. But thank God it didn't, because I have a wonderful husband today. So I finally just kind of got to a point where I got arrested again for a domestic disturbance on the beach in St. Pete. I don't really remember what happened. To be honest, like, that's kind of how it is for 10 or 15 years of my life. Like, I remember bits and pieces, and I think it was mostly I was in a blackout most of the time. So I kind of hope I don't remember a lot of that stuff, but who knows what God will reveal to me. I was at another school, another college at this time, and I was drinking with a guy in one of my classes, and he mentioned to me that he was an Alcoholics Anonymous at one point in his life. And you know, I didn't think about the fact, like, oh, he's drinking now, well, that's weird. And he just mentioned it, and we got to talking another day, and he was like, I think you might be an alcoholic. I was like, okay, whatever. Coming from a guy who's an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had been seeing a therapist. I'd seen therapists since I was like 16, and I just didn't tell anybody the truth, kind of like Mindy was saying. I wasn't able to. And I finally decided, for some reason, to tell this woman really what was going on with me and that I felt horrible. And she had suggested to me going to Alcoholics Anonymous a couple different times, and I was like, I can do this by myself. That was my thing, is I can do this by myself. And I don't know why that was so important to me. Like, I didn't need all of you. I just wanted to do it alone. And finally, I just had this moment of clarity one night when I woke up from a blackout in my mom's house, and I had brought somebody back there who I didn't even know. And it was like, it was just a moment of clarity where I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? My grandfather did die from this disease. I forgot to mention that. Like, he died from complications from alcoholism. And I saw my grandpa, and I saw that was me. That was where I was headed. And it was enough for me to tell my therapist about that again, and she said, why don't you try AA? And I was like, okay. And I remember that guy from class had said to me that he had been to some meetings, so I asked him, I said, can you take me to a meeting? And he got all excited and weird and brought me like a big book and pamphlets, and I was like, I just want to go to a meeting. I'm not saying I need this stuff. I just want to go to a meeting. And he lived in St. Pete, so the first meeting I went to was a Friday night meeting, like 5 or 5:30, I can't remember, at this little church. And I raised my hand as a newcomer because that's what I was told, to do that. And so they talked about the first step. And I kind of remember, I could kind of hear what some of them were saying, but it was more like the feeling that I got, like I was comfortable there. And at the end of the meeting, they were passing out white chips, and I didn't know what that meant, but this woman who was sitting next to me, her name was Joy, and I think that's a total God thing, was like elbowing me, go get a white chip. So I was like, okay, I'll get a white chip. And I don't really know how I got from my seat to the the woman who was handing out the white chips, it was like my legs were numb. It was just this weird feeling. But I think that was me finally admitting to myself and everyone else that I had a problem and that, okay, I'm going to try this. And I just remember feeling totally freaked out after the meeting and crying and like feeling like my life was over. And it was scary. It was really, really scary. But kind of like Mindy said too, I was so afraid that I was like willing to do whatever because I saw where my life was going. So that fear of not knowing was less than that fear of like living in this, the hell that I had been living in for the last 10 or 15 years. So within a couple weeks, I got a sponsor. She had 90 days, but that was appealing to me because I could relate to her because she had, you know, just a little bit of time. So she was able to take me through the first couple of steps because that was where she was. And she had me write a list of moments that I could remember that my life was unmanageable and that I was powerless. And I'm so glad that she made me do that because it really, it made me look at the decisions that I had made and the circumstances I had put myself in to see that a higher power was working in my life because I was still alive. It was like a miracle that I was still alive after driving drunk and, you know, just being in the places that I put myself in and the situations. So that made it easy to do a 2 and 3 because then, sure, I totally agree. There's something greater than me. And then I had to get a different sponsor because, like I said, she had only worked up to there, so she had me get a different sponsor. And this sponsor took me the rest of the way through the steps, and I did, you know, like we prayed, and that was weird. And she had me get used to praying, which I was like embarrassed by myself to pray in the beginning, like but I did it anyways because I was told to, and I was scared of what would happen if I didn't do whatever my sponsor said. Like I was scared I was going to drink or use. I was just scared. So I took direction, which is weird for me because and you can ask my husband even today. Like I don't like people telling me what to do. but when it comes to the program, like I take that seriously. And I did an inventory, and my sponsor and I were driving to Port Charlotte because she had to speak, and she had me read my inventory to her, and she asked me to tell her my secrets, and I did, and it was just, it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. And, you know, she had me reflect on that when we got to this big meeting down in Port Charlotte, you know, kind of by myself for a little while, because we're supposed to do a 6 and 7 immediately after we do an inventory, and, you know, and look at my character defects and ask God to remove those and humbly ask him and want them to be removed so I can be of service. And then I wanted my sponsor to take me through the steps, like, bam, 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 right away. I want to get through these. I want to get done with these. And, you know, she's like, we're going to get through them. Just calm yourself down and just continue to go into meetings and make friends with women. And I was gung-ho and on fire. And that's not a bad thing. She was just trying to say to me that you don't, this is how I did it. So she was taking me through the steps, how she did it. And that, you know, not to worry, we were going to get through them. So it took like probably almost a year, for me to start making my amends. And I had some really great experiences with my amends the first time around. Because I've done the steps a couple times since then. You know, we moved out to San Diego for a couple of years, and I got a sponsor when we moved out there, and I did the steps with her. But I've had some experiences with my amends that are just amazing. And, you know, some of them haven't been great, but I used to steal when I was little, and I know that's weird, but I don't know if it was just like the thrill of it or what, but I stole from this toy store a couple different times, like weird random stuff, like junk, but I had to write this lady a letter and explain to her that I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous and that I'm trying to clean up my past. And I had to give her a check for what I thought I had stolen from her plus interest. And she sent me this little card back that said, good luck and God bless. And, like, she sent me these ladybug stickers. And anybody who knows me knows that I love ladybugs. And this lady doesn't know me. So it was a total God thing. And the majority of responses that I have gotten from people are them saying, good luck with everything today. And, you know, you were a good employee and, being very supportive, which surprised me because, you know, in my head, like, I know that I really screwed these people over and I didn't care about them or, you know, what they were doing for me. I was just taking from them. So having to admit that and, you know, try to say, is there anything I can do for you? And then have them say, no, thank you, though, but good luck. It's just, it's amazing. And I did make an amends to my uncle, and because I was hanging out with my cousin, kind of put her in some bad situations just because my priorities were to get drugs. And, of course, I've got my 20-year-old cousin with me, like, using my ID at bars and so I had to make an amends to him for putting her in that position. And he was still really mad at me. He got very mad at me. And he said some things that I really wanted to, like, make a comment on. And I couldn't because we're not allowed to do that. I had to let him speak his mind. And I deserved the stuff he was saying. And he needed to get that out. So I realized, like, amends are not just for me to try to set things right with people. Like, sometimes people have, you know, grudges against us for what we've done. So it gave him the chance to get that stuff out, too. So that was eye-opening. And doing 10, 11, and 12, it's kind of like a daily thing. So it wasn't like I just got through with 10, 11, and 12, and life has been great because obviously it's more about, and my husband and I were talking about this on the way here, it's more about, like, bringing the program, like, into my everyday life. And I think that's what 10, 11, and 12 does for us. And so I get to keep myself in check and see how I'm acting and see if I'm acting out of fear or if my character defects are coming up. And, you know, whether it's writing it down or just talking about it as it comes up with friends or with my sponsor or other people, but telling on myself, you know, when I'm thinking about things or not thinking about things or just being open and not isolating and staying involved. And, you know, like I said, we moved out to San Diego for a few years. And, you know, I do have to say that after I went to meetings in St. Pete for a couple of months and then I came over to Tampa because I lived in Tampa, but because of that guy, I started meetings in St. Pete. But it was easier for me to go to meetings here. Someone suggested the Young People's Group and started coming here and got to fellowship, which saved me in the beginning because I needed to be busy constantly because I was constantly thinking of, like, about drinking or using because my mind was just there for so many years. And it's great because you get involved and you're around this group and you get to, like, you get to do activities after the meeting, and then there's house meetings, and I needed that. I needed to be busy all the time, so I was constantly around people, or I was sleeping. Like, I needed that so much in the beginning, so I'm so grateful to this meeting for that. And I do remember the first time I realized that obsession had been removed, that I no longer was, like, obsessing about drinking or using. I was in the shower, and I realized, like, oh, my God, I haven't thought about drinking for, like, a couple days now. And it was beautiful because that was all I thought about before. And I don't know. So I got involved, started getting involved, got commitments, and just stayed busy. And we moved, And actually, before we moved, I have to share this part. My fiance moved out there before I did. And, you know, I was like, oh, we're going to be apart. It's going to be horrible. And it was. But when we first started dating each other, it was early on in sobriety. And, you know, it's suggested that we don't do that. And, like, I totally see that now. But in the middle of it, it was like, you know, we tried not to do it. We tried to listen to people. But we were in love. So it was like we were all about each other. And I can only speak for me, but I know I wasn't calling my sponsor as much as I needed to be for as early on in sobriety as I was. It was all about him. It wasn't as much like meetings that I need to be going to and girlfriends that I need to be making and commitments that I need to be keeping. It was all about him. So him moving out to San Diego before me and us being apart for 6 or 9 months or whatever gave me the opportunity to get back in contact with my sponsor and then work my steps. And I think that was a total God thing too, because I don't know otherwise what would have happened. Moved out there, got a new sponsor, and started sponsoring women. And anybody who's sponsored people knows, like, it's great when you get to see people come in and they want this and they want to do the work and they want to take the action and they're excited about it and you get to see them change. And then there's those who get a little bit of time and they go back out there. And, you know, it's really sad because this, not everybody gets this. And you do have to work. And this disease is real. We're all here for the same reason. We're all here because we want to be sober. Thank you. And there's no way I'm going to last for 15 more minutes. But anyways, thank you. Sometimes I have to remind myself of that, like why we're here. Because it's not a social event. It's not just for fun. It's and I have to remind myself to those during those times when I like don't feel like going to a meeting or my life gets so busy that I feel like I need some sleep and AA is just gonna have to wait. Like, no, that's not how it works. Alcoholics Anonymous has to be the number one priority, and if I put that first, the rest of my life in sobriety has been wonderful. And that doesn't mean that today I still get to go to as many meetings as I went to when I first got sober, because I have gotten busier with things. But I still have to be current with my sponsor. I still have to be practicing these principles like throughout my life, which means in my relationship, in my place of work, you know, in my relationships with my family, which are the hardest. Because for some reason, like, family brings out character defects like no other. So that's a constant. And I can't just come in here and, like, talk to you guys and be all AA and then go and be an asshole to my mom. I just can't. It doesn't sit right. It doesn't. I have that guilt and that shame about this now that I used to have about the drinking or using. So I have to be current about that, and I have to be working on it. And, you know, my life has gotten busier. I finally graduated from college and have gotten a couple different jobs. And, you know, that's one thing I'm not the greatest at. I can't be comfortable in a job for more than, like, a couple months. So I was, I don't know what it is. I was kind of job hopping for a while, and it doesn't matter why, I guess. It was just that I kind of realized I was doing that, and I tried to start my own business, and, you know, we moved back here, and I actually work with my husband and my in-laws, and so that was kind of scary at first because I didn't know how that was going to go, but I've been in the same career now for almost 2 years, so for me, you guys, that's amazing. That's not how I operate. So, and it's good too because I don't have to be like this. I don't have to be better than everyone else. I can just be a worker among workers, and like that's good enough for me. Like I don't have to try to outshine and outdo everybody and like try to move my way up. And it's not important to me today. It's just important for me to be a worker and to have a job. And because I just used to want to be like the best at everything. And you know, I still have that drive in some areas. I'm competitive, but it's a lot easier to just kind of be a little more easygoing and to just be a worker among workers. And we have a son today, and that's been a trip. That's been the hardest thing ever. It's been the best thing ever, but the hardest thing ever, especially to still include sobriety and the program and commitments and making it to meetings and talking to a sponsor and having sponsees. Like that's the stuff you have to work at as you stay sober, and at least for me. And I was really scared when I was pregnant, like what's going to happen? Am I going to quit going to meetings? Am I going to quit talking to people? You know, am I going to like lose what I've gained by being as active as I've been in the program? Like that was scary. And I can't go to as many meetings as I used to go to, but I get to work with women. If I'm willing, then God's going to put these women in my life. So I still get to take women through the steps. I get to go to a couple meetings a week. I get to have a sponsor. And this is all the, some days I don't feel like answering my phone. Some days I am exhausted, and it's enough for me to get my son like his meals and to be able to like make sure he doesn't kill himself. But being that I'm an alcoholic, I still have to do what we're taught to do. And that's been a challenge. That's been a real challenge. And now we're gonna have another baby. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But no, it's great. It's good stuff. This is all good stuff. These are gifts, and I don't have to have that horrible like imagine trying to wake up and be there with my son in the morning being hungover or still high or still drunk. And I don't have to go through that today. And if I keep staying active and keep my commitments and sponsoring other women and having a home group, like I get to stay here and be a sober mom. And you know, there was a part of me and it's time in my life when I thought I wasn't gonna be able to have kids just because of like the abuse that I had done to my body and different chemicals I put into it and just different bad, ugly things. You know, I just didn't think I was gonna be able to have kids. And now, you know, we have a second one on the way, so that's amazing in itself. And the relationship that I get to have today with, you know, a man, with my husband, is it's amazing too. And we've learned how to be in a relationship and be a couple and be together and stay together by listening to other couples in Alcoholics Anonymous and by seeing what they do and have them show us, like, well, this is what we had to do in this situation, or you know, this is how we've made it this long. And that's the great thing. Like if I ask my sponsor and she doesn't have the answer, she probably knows somebody who's been through that or had the experience and can say, go talk to so and so, and they can point you in the right direction. And that's been super helpful. And I have to say one thing about, I'm kind of going all over the place, but one thing about working with other women that's really shown me too is, because I get some of these women that are so courageous, and they share these things with me, and it brings up things that either I've forgotten about or have chose to like push deep down that I know I have to talk about now because they came up. And I think it's God like putting each other in our lives to help save each other. So I don't know if that made sense, but I just, every time I go through the steps with somebody and they share an inventory or they go over, you know, their amends, like things always come up for me, like more work that I need to do. And if I don't take that action, I think that's God like working in each of us and through us. And if I don't take those actions, I don't know if I'm going to stay sober. So it's still that part of me that's like scared that if I don't do what I'm told in here, that I'm going to go back out there. And I'm going to lose the relationship I have today. I'm gonna lose the women in my life that I have today because I have friends today and I never had friends before because I didn't know how to be a friend. I just used people, like I said. And so I get to have these women in my life that show up and make me laugh and then I get to help too. And it doesn't, like, we can really be ourselves around each other and tell each other what's going on and help each other constructively be better women. And you know, I say that because that's been a big part in my relationships with people, is not wanting to people please so much and not being afraid to be loving. I'm trying to figure out how to put this. Like, not get in an argument with somebody and be completely rude and bitchy, but actually have like a good, like constructive conversation where we both have our input, and then we like hug and we walk away and we're still friends. Like, there's no, that's not how my life used to work. Like, I was a screamer, and so, I don't know. Those are just some of the good things I have today, and that's really all I've got. I feel like my mind's kind of blank, so thanks.
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous in Cleveland, Ohio, 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with the feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all got the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bad 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flash into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind but have little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words, love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. Let us never get the degree of smug complacency that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much. Thank you.